range of 4 to 17 millimoles per liter, is considered safe. However, a study of over 1,000 cognitively intact elderly who were followed for several years found that the risk of developing dementia was nearly doubled for those who had homocysteine levels of just 14 millimoles per liter at the study's start. Even more stunning, an increase of only 5 millimoles per liter in homocysteine levels raised the risk of cognitive deterioration by another 40%. This indicates that our brains are more sensitive to this substance, and therefore to vascular changes, than previously imagined. The good news is that high homocysteine levels are completely reversible. Not only that, one can achieve this simply by eating right. How? The production of homocysteine happens to be regulated by specific B vitamins, B12 and folate, i.e. vitamin B9, above all, in combination with the B6 mentioned earlier. When you don't have enough of these B vitamins in your system, your homocysteine goes up and affects your circulation. When you do have enough, it goes right back down where it belongs. A number of studies agree that adequate B vitamin levels are protective against age-related cognitive decline. For instance, a study of 1,000 people, ages 65 and older, found that those whose diets were rich in folate, more than 400 micrograms per day, had a lower risk of developing dementia as compared to those whose diets were poor in folate, less than 300 micrograms per day. Similar results were observed for vitamin B12. Among over 500 elderly participants, those who had low B12 levels, i.e., less than the DRI recommended dose of 2.4 micrograms per day, had an increased risk of developing dementia as they got older. However, not even those whose B12 consumption was within normal limits were safe. The rate of cognitive decline for the average 80-year-old who consumed the recommended dose of B12 was 25% higher than that of a similar 80-year-old who consumed 20 micrograms per day. Note that this is 10 times the recommended dosage. Clearly, your brain needs more B vitamins than the rest of you. It is very important to make sure that our brains have access to plenty of these B vitamins. Not only are they good for your brain at large, but they also have a firmly established role in the prevention of dementia. Recent randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials, that all adds up to very thorough trials, tested the effects of high-dose B vitamin supplementation in a group of 85 patients with mild cognitive impairment, MCI, a condition at high risk for progressing to Alzheimer's. Over a 2-year period, the patients were treated with a combination of folic acid, 0.8 milligrams per day, vitamin B12, 0.5 milligrams per day, and vitamin B6, 20 milligrams per day. At the end of the study, supplementation with these three vitamins had maintained memory performance and at the same time reduced the rate of brain shrinkage when measured via an MRI. The treatment was particularly effective for participants with high homocysteine levels. Their homocysteine went down to normal levels, and they also showed 53% reduced brain shrinkage. Interestingly, the treatment's success was also related to the patient's consumption of omega-3 PUFAs. Those with high levels of omega-3s responded extremely well to B vitamin supplementation. On the other hand, patients with low omega-3 levels, before and during treatment, did not show improvements, but rather showed the same brain shrinkage as the untreated patients. The moral of the story: make sure you consume plenty of omega-3s together with your B vitamins to maximize their combined efficacy. These B vitamins are easy to obtain from a balanced diet. Many plant-based foods are rich sources of folate, especially black-eyed peas, lentils, spinach, tofu, and avocado. Vitamin B12 is found in shellfish. Clams are the richest source. And fish, salmon, trout, mackerel, and fresh tuna fish top the list, as well as chicken, eggs, beef, and dairy products. Remember how a mere 3 ounces of wild salmon supply enough omega-3s for an entire day? Well, that same small piece of fish also contains 3 times the recommended daily dose of B12. Pair that with a fresh spinach salad and some avocado, and you've got a perfect brain-healthy meal. In the end, just imagine that 25% of all dementia cases, and most likely some of the remaining 75%, might be fully prevented by increasing consumption of B vitamin-rich foods. Ditto for strokes and vascular disease. It is hard to believe that after all this, some people still are not convinced that food is medicine. The brain's defense system, the antioxidants. Have you ever left an apple cut in two on the counter and noticed how it begins to brown? Were you to leave it there, it would darken further and begin to shrivel up. If it were in sunlight, this process would quicken even more. And should the environment be a polluted one, the entire process would accelerate further still. This sort of rusting effect is what we refer to as oxidation. Oxidation itself is a very normal process. It happens all the time to our brains, bodies, and many things that surround us, like apples left on the counter, or iron pipes left in the rain. In the brain, oxidation happens whenever our brain cells burn glucose and oxygen to produce energy. And as you might guess, this is happening continuously. Generally, our brains manage to counterbalance this ongoing oxidation, but sometimes things get out of hand, and the amount of oxidation exceeds our brain's ability to keep it in check. In that case, our brains suffer from what's called oxidative stress. Simply put, oxidative stress is the damage made to cells as a result of prolonged oxidation and of the action of free radicals, harmful molecules that are also produced in the process. Of all bodily organs, the brain is the one that suffers most from oxidative stress. Free radicals incessantly develop, thought by thought, making their way through our neurons like little tornadoes. The more free radicals your brain contains, the more damage done. However, we are not defenseless. We can call upon antioxidants to protect our delicate brains. These substances are nature's way to prevent oxidation from happening in the first place. They have the capacity to wander throughout our bodies, brain included, fighting off whatever free radicals they encounter along the way. In simple terms, antioxidants are our police officers chasing away the bad guys. Some antioxidants are produced by our body, but most are not, and need to be obtained from our diet. In particular, vitamin E from almonds or flax seeds, and vitamin C from citrus, berries, and a variety of veggies, are the body's main antioxidant defenders. As an experiment, try sprinkling some lemon juice on that shriveled apple and watch how much longer the apple lasts. It is important that we eat enough antioxidants to protect ourselves against brain aging and disease. Large-scale studies in the United States and Europe found that those elderly who consumed at least 11 international units, 16 milligrams, of vitamin E per day had a 67% lower risk of developing dementia as they got older, compared to those who consumed 6 international units, 4 milligrams, per day. Those who consumed the highest amounts of both vitamin C and E had an even lower risk. Studies estimated that we need 133 milligrams or more of vitamin C per day to provide our brains with optimal protection, in addition to the 16 milligrams of vitamin E specified earlier. In more practical terms, it just so happens that the spinach avocado salad mentioned in the previous section is rich in B vitamins as well as vitamin E. Sprinkle it with lemon juice for extra vitamin C, et voila! See how easy it is to eat right for your brain? Overall, there is consensus that regular consumption of vitamin C and E, sometimes along with beta-carotene, a precursor to vitamin A, found specifically in fruits and vegetables orange in color, reduces the speed at which our brain cells age, increasing longevity and lowering the risk of cardiovascular disease and dementia. Yet current guidelines recommend we take much lower doses of these precious nutrients. Part of the problem is that, when tested in formal clinical settings, antioxidant vitamins didn't turn out to be as miraculous as everyone had hoped. Vitamin E was the only one that showed potential for slowing functional decline in Alzheimer's patients, but only at high doses of 2,000 international units, 1.3 grams per day. What was at first puzzling to many led to a revelation. Antioxidant supplements don't really work. We must obtain these nutrients from natural food sources instead. The truth is, in the studies mentioned, only those participants who obtained their antioxidant vitamins from foods showed lower rates of cognitive decline and dementia. Those who relied on supplements to get their antioxidants had the same chance of developing dementia as those who consumed little to no vitamins. Vitamin E is a great example of why this happens. The vitamin E found in synthetic supplements is composed of only one of the 8 natural forms of this vitamin, alpha-tocopherol, while food itself provides combinations of all forms. This seems to reduce oxidative stress and inflammation to a greater degree than alpha-tocopherol alone. Pair that discovery with the fact that pills aren't a particularly delicious meal, and it only makes sense to consume your antioxidants from fresh, vibrant foods, such as high-quality vegetables and fruits, as well as nuts and seeds. The wondrous world of flavonoids. As you might remember from Chapter 1, plants produce a vast array of chemical compounds called phytonutrients, sometimes referred to as vitamin P. These substances serve a very specific purpose. Their job is to fight oxidative stress and inflammation, thereby increasing the life of the plant itself. They are usually produced in combination with various antioxidant vitamins, and are particularly concentrated in the berries of the plant. As it turns out, plants aren't the only ones benefiting from these compounds. By eating these berries, we too receive all the benefits of the plant's effort to live long and prosper. Scientists have identified and categorized more than 4,000 phytonutrients, such as flavonoids and phenols. Common examples are the quercetin found in apples, the flavanols found in cacao beans, and the resveratrol that gives red wine its good name, each renowned for their superior anti-aging properties. While scientists have historically overlooked these substances, new experimental studies suggest that phytonutrients play a greater role in human health than previously thought. In the next chapters, we'll see how they make up the heart and soul of those diets proven to promote health and longevity worldwide. Meanwhile, let's talk about minerals. Minerals. A little goes a long way. Besides vitamins, the brain loves mineral matter. Earth-derived minerals that we primarily absorb from fruits and vegetables. Minerals are, in fact, remains of plant and animal tissue contained in the soil. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, refers to this very process. Minerals contained in the soil are absorbed by plants as they grow during the natural process that recycles these elements as nutrients in our foods. Much like vitamins, minerals are essential to our physical and mental health. They lend structure to our cells, particularly our blood, nerve, and muscle cells, as well as to those that form our bones, teeth, and soft tissues. Minerals also serve many functions specific to the brain. Some function as electrolytes to help regulate brain fluids and hydration. Others power our metabolism. Others yet have the very important task of regulating nerve transmission. Magnesium, zinc, copper, iron, iodine, selenium, manganese, and potassium are each essential in keeping our brains healthy and active as we age. But it isn't only mineral deficiencies that are harmful to the brain. An excess of some minerals, especially in the form of metals, can be toxic to the brain when absorbed in high concentrations. These are primarily lead, cadmium, and mercury, which are known as heavy metals. Poisoning can easily occur as a result of industrial exposure, air or water pollution, foods, medicines, improperly coated food containers, or the ingestion of lead-based paints. Arsenic, another toxic metal, is used in the manufacture of pesticides and given as an antibiotic to farm-raised animals like chicken, which is unfortunate as we end up ingesting the poison when we eat the chicken. Nickel is used in the manufacturing of the trans-saturated fats used to make margarine and soft spreads. You might want to check your toothpaste, too. There's a good chance it contains titanium. A seemingly harmless material like aluminum also poses a major threat to our delicate brains. It's long been known that aluminum is toxic to brain cells, even in small amounts. Yet we are all easily exposed to this metal by using aluminum containers and several types of cosmetics and medicines, and even by drinking purified water. While symptoms and physical findings vary according to the metal accumulated, metal poisoning affects the activity of cells in the entire nervous system. In severe cases, leading to brain inflammation, encephalopathy, which is often irreversible. Heavy metal toxicity is therefore one of the biggest threats to brain health in our society because of the unrestricted use of these elements for industrial purposes, as well as a generalized indifference to the way we treat the planet. However, other more common and far less dangerous minerals can also damage the brain if ingested in excessive amounts. These are iron, copper, and zinc. In adequate concentrations, these minerals are essential for optimal brain function. Iron is crucial for production of hemoglobin, the part of our blood cells that carry oxygen, as well as some proteins. Copper is key to enzyme function and the health of our immune system, blood vessels, nerves, and bones. Zinc is one of the most important metals when it comes to supporting brain metabolism. We can all imagine just how easily deficiencies in any of these minerals would affect our brain power and mental sharpness. A common medical condition called anemia is a good example. Anemia develops when your blood lacks enough healthy red blood cells, or hemoglobin. This is typically due to iron deficiency. Some of the first symptoms of anemia are fatigue, dizziness, weakness, loss of stamina, and brain fog, which would have an obvious impact on our ability to perform physically and intellectually. Fortunately for us, it takes very little iron to reach adequate levels. On the other hand, most people err in the opposite direction, ingesting too much of this nutrient, which is toxic in excess. Make note, too little iron will make you anemic, but too much can harm your brain. This goes for copper and zinc as well. Some studies have suggested that overconsuming iron, zinc, and copper might contribute to cognitive problems in the elderly. Excessive intake of these minerals promotes oxidative stress, that sort of rusting effect that makes your brain age faster. Copper is the one that seems to be particularly bad news for your brain. New research suggests that the copper we ingest just by eating the typical modern diet is enough to increase our chances of developing Alzheimer's. Copper seems to reduce the brain's ability to clear away toxic amyloid proteins before they form the plaques that are the hallmark of Alzheimer's, while encouraging the clumping of those proteins at the same time. Yet this is nothing compared to the copper ingested as part of a high-fat diet. Research shows that people whose diets are high in copper, saturated fat, and trans fat have particularly quickening rates of cognitive decline, roughly 19 additional years worth of aging. In these studies, the copper intake that was ultimately associated with cognitive decline turned out to be harmful only among those people whose diets were high in saturated fat and trans fats at the same time. To make things worse, it takes very little copper for brains on a high-fat diet to go haywire, only 2.7 milligrams per day, which is the equivalent of a mere 3 ounces of ham. But before we blame food in general for these effects, consider this. What is unknown to most of us is that copper also enters the body via other sources, by way of our drinking water for one, when delivered via copper pipes. Further, many people absorb extra copper via vitamin supplements. Common multivitamins contain both copper and iron, sometimes even exceeding the recommended dosage. In short, if your diet is high in fat, you really need to watch your mineral intake too, especially if it comes in the form of multivitamin supplements. In the United States, we don't even require these particular minerals in our supplements, as we consume plenty of these minerals from our everyday foods. 8. Food is information. Genes load the gun. Lifestyle pulls the trigger. The past chapters have revealed just how much our brains are affected by our diet and lifestyle choices. From the way our neurons communicate with one another to the birth and growth of new brain cells, our personal day-to-day choices are continually influencing what's going on inside our brains. We will now see how these effects are controlled not only by our lifestyle choices, but also by the interplay of our behavior and genetic predisposition. Let's begin by addressing the delicate and highly complex theme of our genetic individuality. As Dr. James D. Watson said back in the 1960s, "We are not all equal. It's simply not true. That isn't science." As the quote points out, it takes none other than the man who discovered DNA's double helical structure to confirm just how complex, variable, and highly individual our genes are. This inherent individuality occurs in a substantial portion of our genome, giving rise to distinctive characteristics such as hair and eye color. These variations depend on the subtler genetic information carried in our DNA. Whenever you are looking into a loved one's eyes, you are experiencing nothing less than a distinctive display of their signature genetics at work. How this actually occurs is less obvious. Our genetic variability is the result of thousands of years of continuous genetic mutations. A mutation is a permanent change in our DNA. For example, originally, all humans had brown eyes. But some 6,000 to 10,000 years ago, a genetic mutation occurred that produced the first blue-eyed human. When this first happened, one can only imagine the sensation it caused. Since then, the blue-eyed gene has spread the world over, and today is considered a fairly common trait. Genetic mutations have happened throughout the course of evolution. Some are positive, such as the mutations that ultimately led to the beauty of different eye colors, or to the increased size and power of our brains. Other mutations are harmful and led to disease, However, these bad genetic mutations are rare, affecting less than 1% of the population. To sum it up, there are a handful of genetic mutations that can make us sick, and a myriad of genetic variants that simply make us different. This is particularly true as far as our brains are concerned. The human genome sports an estimated 15 million variations, a large part of which involve brain function. Just imagine that each and every one of us carries at least some permutations of all these variations, and the term diversity assumes a whole new meaning. Our brains possess something akin to a fingerprint. While the architecture of the brain, with its various partitions into functional areas and specific structures, might be roughly the same in all of us, there are large variations when it comes to brain size, shape, activity, and molecular composition. Such differences are not only based on our unique genetic makeup, but are shaped, molded, and written upon our backgrounds, education, and experiences. Add to that the many foods we've been exposed to, our cultural environments, and all the places we've explored since the day we were born, and it only makes sense that no two brains could ever be alike. This tremendous variability is never more evident than when viewing brain scans. I have been doing brain imaging for over 15 years, inspecting and quantifying hundreds, if not thousands, of scans. Among them are those of the young and old and every age in between, those of men and women, those of the happy and the unhappy, of the healthy and less fortunate. In addition, I've studied equal numbers of scans showing the effects of neurological diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or stroke. Not a single day goes by that I do not stand in awe at the uniqueness that each patient's scan reveals, each one different and distinct from the next. In the end, it is our unique genetic makeup, combined with our own lifestyle and behavior, that determines the fate of our brains, and therefore our chances of aging gracefully over the course of a lifetime, or of forgetting names and faces instead. While it is true that one's brain blueprint largely depends on the DNA it has received from its parents, recent discoveries have led to rethinking the old view that you are your DNA, in favor of a much more dynamic model. In this new model, genes are pivotal in establishing some aspects of brain health, but it is our current, ongoing lifestyle choices that play a central role in turning those genes on or off. As strange as this might sound, you actually have the power to activate or silence your genes, and this discovery is called epigenetics. Epigenetics refers to the fact that while your lifestyle choices won't modify the structure of your DNA, they do have the ability to modify the way your DNA works. Where you live, who you interact with, how you exercise, which medications you take, and yes, you guessed it, especially what you eat, cause changes inside your body that in turn switch your genes on or off. This can occur once in a lifetime or continuously over time, thereby influencing your chances of retaining or not retaining optimal cognitive fitness. What all this boils down to is that your DNA is not your destiny after all. The genetic lottery might determine the cards in your deck, but the way you are living your life deals you the hand you are actually playing. We're back to where we started. Genes load the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. Switching off your DNA. Among all the lifestyle factors that are known to have an impact on the action of human DNA, food is the one that plays a predominant role. Everybody exercises once in a while, takes medications now and then, or is exposed to environmental toxins on occasion, which all impact your DNA. But when it comes to food, we partake in meals each and every day, and several times a day at that. And we do this consistently over the course of an entire lifetime. It is this continuous exposure to food that makes diet the most important factor ever to affect our DNA. Several studies have shown that some dietary nutrients have the ability to influence and regulate our DNA's behavior. These happen to be the same nutrients the brain needs most, such as omega-3s, choline, several antioxidants, and B vitamins. Over the past decade, this realization has prompted nothing short of a revolution in the nutrition field. It has in fact become clear that the effects of nutrition on health can only be fully appreciated with a deeper understanding of how nutrients act at a genetic and molecular level. The interaction between food and genes has become the major focus of a new discipline called nutrigenomics, which aims at revealing how food directly influences DNA activity. This novel perspective has brought new meaning to the old adage, "We are what we eat," by demonstrating that what we eat is busy determining what we are to become. At the same time, our genes affect our reaction to food as well, making us receptive to certain foods and intolerant of others. It turns out that diet, far from merely being a source of fuel or sustenance, is instead a genetic on-off switch. Some foods directly influence our DNA by turning on the good genes that make us more resistant to disease, while others turn off these same genes, making us more likely to get sick. This is because food is information. Dietary nutrients are nothing less than biological signals that, upon entering our systems, are read by your cells. Believe it or not, your cells are coated with detectors that are busy searching for specific nutrients. Let's say they spot healthy omega-3s entering your bloodstream via your meal. Once they do that, they let your DNA know that help is on the way. Then, it's as if your DNA takes a deep breath and slows down the body's production of other anti-inflammatory compounds as a result. This is just one example of how a common dietary ingredient can powerfully influence your genes. Depending on whether a nutrient is considered friend or foe, a corresponding genetic response will be cued accordingly. Whether we look at how food affects our genes or how our genes affect our reaction to food, this new burgeoning science has thrown open the doors to our genetic individuality being key when it comes to how we approach health and nutrition. As a result, the age of a one-size-fits-all approach is fast becoming a thing of the past. Instead, we stand at the forefront of a new, personalized approach to our health, and in turn, our nutrition. Bioindividuality. These discoveries point out that there is not one perfect way of eating that will work equally well for everybody. This concept, often referred to as biological individuality, is an idea currently gaining unprecedented respect and interest in the medical field. Bioindividuality insists on the fact that each human being has a unique biochemistry that influences behavior, mental health, hormonal production, allergic tendencies, immune capacity, and of course, nutritional needs. Because of the genetic differences in the ways our bodies process food, some of us are naturally deficient in some nutrients, while possessing an overabundance of others. As the proverb goes, one man's meat is another man's poison. Indeed, it was recently discovered that many human genes have a heightened sensitivity to diet. This is true both for the individual and for certain populations. Lactose intolerance is a perfect example. Many people are lactose intolerant, which means that they have difficulty digesting lactose, a type of sugar contained in milk. This happens because they lack an enzyme called lactase, which is responsible for breaking down lactose. Since humans digest mother's milk as infants, the gene that produces lactase switches off on its own post-weaning. However, once humans began herding cattle, being able to digest cow's milk as adults became an evolutionary advantage. Milk is a good source of fat and protein, as well as calcium, vitamin D, and several B vitamins, including the brain's beloved choline. Some populations adapted to this by keeping the lactase gene turned on, and thus continuing to produce lactase in their bodies throughout adulthood. Other populations that were not dependent on cattle, such as some parts of China, Thailand, and Africa, did not develop this ability. To this day, people who stop producing lactase after weaning are lactose intolerant as adults. At an individual level, we find even more varied and unpredictable differences. As a result, we are each genetically unique in the way we process our food. For example, some people are naturally less efficient at assimilating brain essential nutrients, such as vitamin E, some B vitamins, or omega-3s. Others have difficulties controlling trace minerals like copper, iron, and zinc. Still others have insufficient levels of stomach acid or impaired intestinal function and have trouble digesting their food. Making things more complex yet is the fact that we each have a different microbiome. Meet your mighty microbiome. The term microbiome refers to the collection of bacteria, viruses, fungi, and other microbes that inhabit the human body. Just like planet Earth has its own ecosystem filled with animals, plants, and all sorts of organisms, the human body hosts a complex ecosystem of its own, which is home to fantastic diversity of life. Of this ecosystem, very little of it actually belongs to our species. All sorts of microbes can be found thriving upon our skin, inside our mouths, and along all the body's various nooks and crannies. They have a particularly large stakeout in the GI system. The body of an adult human harbors nearly 100 trillion bacteria, with more than 95% of them located in our gut. Scientists have long known that bacteria reside within humans, but their presence and relevance remained underappreciated until the discovery of the microbiome. It turns out that in our bodies, bacterial cells outnumber human cells by about 10 to 1. In other words, up to 90% of our cells are non-human. Even though bacterial cells are much smaller than ours, 90% is a lot of cells. If you grouped them together, they would be about the size of a football and weigh up to 3 pounds. Not only are there millions of bacteria residing inside of us, but these bacteria derive from thousands of different species, each equipped with their own genetic material. As a result, we are literally inundated by non-human DNA. It is nothing short of mind-blowing that the human genome, aka our DNA, is extremely small as compared with that of these much simpler organisms. Our DNA comprises about 23,000 genes, while the microbes inhabiting our bodies are representative of an incredible 4 million distinct genes of their own. This raises a whole range of thought-provoking, existential, and scientific questions, not the least of which is, should we be worried? Some microbes, especially viruses, can definitely harm humans. For example, some viruses give us measles and the flu. Some bacteria can also be detrimental, like when they cause strep throat or food poisoning. But in reality, fewer than 1% of bacteria causes disease in humans. The vast majority are not only harmless, but downright helpful. As it turns out, our gut microbes are major players in our overall health, literally, from head to toe. First and foremost, they help us digest food, each one having the ability to absorb various nutrients to a greater or lesser degree, and each one reacting differently to the foods we eat. For instance, our capacity to absorb vitamins like B12, along with several minerals essential for a healthy nervous system, is highly dependent on the health and diversity of our gut microbiome. Moreover, these friendly bacteria are able to produce essential vitamins like folate, and also help maintain adequate levels of amino acids like tryptophan, which is in turn necessary to produce neurotransmitters like serotonin. Additionally, our gut flora produces fatty acids that are beneficial for the body, like butyrate, an excellent source of energy for our muscles. But what is particularly surprising about these bacteria-made fatty acids is that they can directly alter the function of the blood-brain barrier, the cellular fortress protecting the brain against infections and unwanted pathogens. The fatty acids produced by our gut microbes can both strengthen the barrier and make it more lax, effectively regulating how many nutrients and foreign substances can pass through the brain's defense system. Last but not least, our gut flora acts as a mighty warrior for the immune system, defending us against disease-causing microbes. There is a delicate balance between the gut's strength and keeping out the bad guys, while at the same time managing to absorb and harbor the good guys. In general, the intestinal lining must be permeable enough for nutrients and other molecules to both enter and exit the intestine. However, if the lining becomes too permeable, leaky gut can occur. In this case, the space between cells opens up too much, allowing leakage of intestinal contents, such as large food molecules or bacteria, into the circulation. When our body senses these foreign invaders in our bloodstream, it triggers an inflammatory response, one aimed at escorting the intruders back out. In the long run, the inflammatory response aimed at defending us from the bad guys can backfire, damaging our intestinal cells and microbiome too, making the gut even more inflamed and leaky. This vicious cycle further impairs the system's ability to absorb the proper nutrients, leaving it vulnerable to food sensitivities or allergies. If this weren't disturbing enough, as we'll see, the brain is potentially at risk of being affected as well. Bugs and brains. Recent studies have revealed that alterations in the gut microbes can influence the risk of brain disorders such as autism, anxiety, depression, and even dementia. This has resulted in increased attention to the concept that a healthy gut is critical to a healthy brain. I can only tell you the beginning of this story because the story has only just begun. While there's been an explosion of research on the microbiome with regard to brain health in recent years, this field is still in its infancy. It is also important to underline that most microbiome research so far, including antibiotic treatment or even fecal transplants, has been largely based on experiments using rodents. given the huge differences between mice and men, there is no guarantee that these findings will hold up in humans. That said, some initial studies done on humans support the existence of a relationship between the world of the microbiota and the health of our brains. This initial research has triggered tremendous interest by the professional and lay media, not to mention national funding agencies, leading to a justifiably meaningful shift in the way we view many brain diseases. Historically, the gut and its collection of microbes have been largely ignored by Western neurology and psychiatry. To this day, students are taught that the brain is anatomically isolated and well guarded by the blood-brain barrier that keeps out pathogens, including bacteria. There are some exceptions, like when such pathogens happen to bypass the blood-brain barrier, causing disease, as in the case of meningitis. But for decades, scientists thought of microbes as either fairly harmless things, hitching a free ride through our bellies, which therefore had nothing to do with what was happening inside our brains, or direct threats to our well-being that had to be gotten rid of. This view has dramatically changed, as a number of new studies have shown that our gut bacteria not only influence how people eat, but also how we think and feel. Some of the most convincing work in this regard has been done on anxiety and depression. For instance, animals genetically engineered to be without a microbiome, the so-called germ-free mice, have increased anxiety-like behaviors and an exaggerated response to stress. They also demonstrate bizarre behaviors, tend to be antisocial, exhibit memory problems, and even show reckless tendencies. However, scientists found that they could stabilize the animals' behavior by supplying them with friendly bacteria. This not only lowered their stress levels, but also directly increased production of GABA, the neurotransmitter that calms nervous activity in their brains. Additionally, the microbiome turned out to be closely involved with neurodevelopment. For decades, doctors and parents alike have noted that anywhere between 40% and 90% of children with autism also demonstrate some GI symptoms, such as food allergies and digestive issues. Recent studies are showing that there might indeed be a connection with issues present in the child's microbiome. For instance, some of the symptoms expressed by germ-free mice, such as limited social interactions, a tendency toward repetitive behavior, and a reduced communication with their peers, are similar to human autism. Treating these autistic mice with Bacteroides fragilis, a bacterium that is sometimes reduced in children with autism, improved the animal's behavior. It made them less anxious, more communicative with other mice, and less prone to showing repetitive patterns. As you might have noticed, all the research reviewed so far was carried out on lab animals. However, there is some evidence that probiotics, i.e., live microbes that reside in your gut and benefit the host, aka you, can alter brain function in humans as well. One of the best-known studies to date used functional MRI, fMRI, to test whether eating probiotic foods like yogurt would elicit changes in brain activity in a group of young participants. Functional MRI is a brain imaging technique that measures changes in blood oxygen levels as a proxy for neuronal activity. This method gives us a snapshot of those brain regions that get activated, or not, in response to different forms of stimulation. In this study, 25 healthy women were divided into a group who ate a cup of probiotic yogurt twice a day for a month, and a control group who did not eat any yogurt. All participants were then shown upsetting pictures of people with angry, sad, or frightened facial expressions to gauge their emotional responses while being monitored with fMRI. Perhaps, surprisingly, there were significant differences in the way yogurt eaters and non-yogurt eaters reacted to this test. The former showed a more moderate response in the face of negative emotional stimulation as compared to the latter. In other words, they were able to remain calmer than those who were without the probiotic supplementation. Wouldn't it be great if doctors prescribed yogurt instead of Xanax? Besides the microbiome's role in influencing anxiety and stress levels, new research indicates that it might be a preeminent factor in determining brain longevity. Over the course of a lifetime, people who consume a diet high in fiber and low in animal fat does not agree with our friendly gut flora, have the healthiest microbiomes. On the contrary, the microbiome of those whose diets are low in fiber but high in animal fat are very fragile and tend to easily collapse. These findings suggest that the lessening of healthy gut bacteria could contribute to the cognitive decline observed in old age. Many people are even wondering whether dementia itself could be due to bacterial infections or malfunction. As of today, there is no clear evidence that an unhealthy microbiome would in and of itself cause dementia. Nonetheless, many viruses and bacteria can profoundly affect the brain, generating symptoms like confusion, brain fog, and memory loss. For example, the human immunodeficiency virus HIV-1 that causes AIDS can also cause a form of dementia known as HIV-related dementia, with symptoms that mimic those of Alzheimer's. The herpes simplex virus that causes sores around the mouth can trigger brain inflammation, encephalitis, thus eliciting cognitive and mood disturbances. Syphilis, a well-known bacterial disease contracted chiefly by infection during sexual intercourse, can spread to the brain and lead to severe cognitive impairment. Because of their ability to affect cognitive health, these pathogens are routinely screened for in the evaluation of dementia. When I was at NYU, we had an interesting experience with a woman referred to us with a diagnosis of MCI, often a prodromal stage to Alzheimer's. She was literally terrified at the thought she might end up developing dementia, as her mother had died of it just a few years prior. After running several blood tests, our medical director spotted something unusual. The patient had a massive, yet completely asymptomatic UTI, urinary tract infection. She reported no pain, no irritation or itching, despite the fact that her urine was full of bacteria and blood cells. Needless to say, antibiotic treatment was initiated immediately. When the patient returned to complete her evaluations a few months later, she received a diagnosis of normal cognition. You can just imagine her relief at being herself again, with no Alzheimer's in sight. In the end, even though the data is still limited, it seems to point to the fact that the microbiome is involved in several aspects of brain health and behavior. This raises hope that optimizing our diet and lifestyle to favor healthy gut bacteria might also be a viable strategy to manage or even prevent anxiety, depression, and autism, as well as the cognitive changes that might occur with aging. But how exactly are we to do that? Good habits, prebiotics, fiber, and fermented foods. First and foremost, our gut health relies on regular consumption of both prebiotic and probiotic foods. Prebiotics are literally food for your body's good microbes. This is because these foods are particularly rich in a distinctive kind of carbohydrate called oligosaccharides, which happen to be your gut flora's favorite meal. These carbs are unique in that, while all other carbs are broken down in the small intestine, oligosaccharides can't be digested there, and consequently flow down to the large intestine virtually untouched. Here, they play the critical role of feeding our friendly bacteria and keeping them healthy. These bacteria-supportive carbs come from foods that are not particularly sweet, but do have an ever-so-slightly sweet aftertaste, such as onions, asparagus, artichokes, and burdock root. You can also find prebiotics in garlic, bananas, oats, and milk. Besides nourishing our friendly bacteria, certain oligosaccharides are drawing increasing attention because of their cholesterol-lowering, cancer-fighting, and detoxification effects. These include the beta-glucans found in mushrooms. Reishi and shiitake mushrooms have shown in many studies. And the glucomannans, abundant in aloe vera juice. I'm a big fan of both, so expect to hear more about these foods in the next chapters. Additionally, fiber-rich foods are crucial to our microbiome's well-being by supporting digestive health and regularity. A healthy digestion is key to removal of waste products, harmful toxins, and bad bacteria, all of which can harm our gut flora. Cruciferous veggies like broccoli, high-fiber fruit like berries, and all kinds of leafy greens, as well as legumes and unsugared whole grain cereals, are good examples of fibrous foods we should consume on a regular basis to ensure proper gut health. Besides prebiotics and fiber, our gut microbes crave probiotic foods. These foods contain live bacteria, probiotics, that, upon reaching the intestine, replenish our microbiome's good guys. Probiotics are naturally provided by fermented and cultured foods, including fermented milk, such as yogurt and kefir, but also pickled vegetables, like sauerkraut. More specific recommendations are included in Chapter 12. Bad habits. Antibiotics, meat, and processed foods. In addition to knowing what to add to your diet and lifestyle, it's equally important to know what to avoid. Any foods and agents that are disruptive to your gut's health, either by increasing its permeability or by causing inflammation, can also decimate your microbiome in the process. Antibiotics are the first entry on the microbiome's most wanted list. The microbiome is negatively affected by the overuse of antibiotics. Since antibiotics are not fussy and inadvertently kill our good microbes along with the bad ones, up until World War II, when medical conditions like pneumonia and wound infections could often prove fatal, antibiotics were a major success. However, they have since become overprescribed in many countries, leading to a pandemic of antibiotic-resistant disease. At the same time, there is the added complication of their having diminished both our microbiota's stability and its diversity. I am not by any means suggesting that you should avoid taking antibiotics when you need them. However, many Americans take antibiotics as a quick fix measure, or even just in case. For example, I have heard people say, "I have the flu, I need antibiotics." Contrary to popular opinion, that's not necessarily the case, as the flu is often caused by viruses, not bacteria. Discuss this with your doctor the next time you feel under the weather. Incidentally, most European doctors recommend eating yogurt or taking a probiotic supplement before or with your antibiotics to protect your GI tract and at the same time replenish your bacterial pool. After medicines, food is the major factor influencing our intestinal function. While antibiotics might enter our bodies only once in a while, food is constantly altering the status and health.